Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We're going to talk about two topics today that help provide care in an appropriate way. How do we care for our young people? Some issues surrounding caring for our young people, for children particularly. We'll visit with Dr. Michelle Critella from the American College of Pediatricians and address a very important topic of pornography and children, what effect that has on children. So we'll talk with her in just a little bit. And we'll visit with some friends from the Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch in the second half of the program, hear how they are working to provide care for at-risk youth. Hope you can stick around for all the conversations today. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin on our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Well, welcome back to Faith and Family, Dr. Michelle Critella. It's good to have a chance to talk with you today and learn more about what's going on with the American College of Pediatricians today.
Oh, thank you so much, Andy. It's always a pleasure to be here on your program.
Tell us what I know that the college has a statement on pornography and children. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. Any other news from the American College of Pediatricians today?
We're happy to report that we are growing, and we're increasingly being able to work with like-minded organizations, including a national pro-life organization of obstetrician and gynecologists. In fact, we will be having a joint medical education conference in Houston, Texas in February that we're very excited about. So we're hoping that this bodes well for an increasing number of pro-life pediatricians and other primary care physicians. So that's our good professional news. And we have also been able to increase our outreach to parents and families through our blogs, because we have hired some marriage and family graduate students in marriage and family counseling who are blogging on a variety of common topics and issues of interest to mothers and fathers. So we're happy.
I've noticed the increase of posts on there recently. So, well, thanks for doing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thanks for spreading the word.
Glad to do it. Glad to do it. Well, today the topic we're addressing is pornography and children, the effects that pornography has on children. And I know the college has released a statement about that. Before we went on the air, you were explaining how sometimes when a statement is released, it's very structured and very specific language, kind of technical language. Today we'll talk about that statement, but I'll also talk about it in layman's terms as well. And I appreciate that you always do a fine job of helping us work through these issues as parents and grandparents and care providers would want to understand.
Right, exactly. I mean, if people are, obviously it's a public statement, so anyone could go to our website and look at it. So our specific position statements often have a number of statistics, which a mother and father may not find very practical or useful, but a graduate student or policymaker may need. So certainly on programs like this, I want to make it really just break it down and get to the bottom line and make it very usable to families.
Well, what are some of the key things that parents or care providers, educators need to know about pornography and its effects on children?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing we all need to realize, because even myself as a parent, one of the first things that really surprised me was how pervasive pornography is, first among adults, even Christian adults. In some surveys, over half to 70% of even Christian men are involved or addicted to pornography, depending on where those surveys, you know, are taken, the different populations. So I think as parents and educators and adults in general, we have to realize that first we have to take an inventory of our own lives, and if we need help, if we have this problem, an addiction to pornography, we need to get ourselves help first if we want to hope to impact our children in the right way. The reason the college decided that we really need to get a statement out on the issue of pornography in children is because we're seeing these same elevated percentages. Up to 70% of teen boys surveyed think there's no problem with pornography, that it's a fine thing to view and engage in. And nearly 50% of girls in some surveys are finding the same opinion. And the problems, pornography becomes addictive just as drugs, alcohol, and smoking. So we need to get that word out to our young people so that they're aware that this is not a harmless thing.
What is some of the harm that is brought about by pornography? How does pornography, well, let's talk about boys. We'll talk about girls as well.
Sure.
Particularly boys, you know, when are we seeing, at what age are we seeing boys first exposed to pornography?
That's really a good question, because this is another, can be shocking, but even as young as 10. And the primary reason is technology. Now, especially with smartphones being given to elementary school students, you know, porn sites are just a click away, and it's most frequently in the young kids, most frequently happening by accident, that they're coming upon these. And whether accidental exposure or, you know, an older sibling or older friend leading them to the sites on purpose, it can be quite shocking to these young children. Confusion, anxiety, and depression are all mental impacts, mental side effects of being exposed to pornography that young. And even in teenagers who think it's no big deal, when these, particularly the boys, when they are evaluated, yes, they have depression and anxiety related to their porn usage. And just like being addicted to drugs and alcohol, porn use is associated with poor performance in school as well. So really, we have to start thinking about pornography the same way we do drugs and alcohol when it comes to kids.
What about girls and exposure to pornography?
Sure. With the girls, I think the biggest harm there is to their self-image and self-esteem, because they are taking this, they're taking the pornography in, and it's giving a horrible message, the message that girls are valued only for their bodies and only for how well they can sexually satisfy men. This notion that a relationship is healthy even when it involves verbal abuse, physical abuse, or sexual abuse, because all of these things are contained in within the porn. It's a very dangerous message for girls to absorb, and it's equally dangerous for the boys to have. We're setting them up for horrible relationships.
How does pornography distort a young person's view of self-worth and sexuality?
Right. Well, and I think this is the same for the boys as the girls. It's, you know, it's reducing sexuality to purely to a physical pleasure, to a taking versus, you know, particularly from, and I say this whether it's a Christian audience or a secular audience, sexual intercourse is supposed to be a gift. Mm-hmm. And particularly from the Christian worldview, your sexuality is the gift of your entire self. You know, and even a secular or audience can understand that. It's not just skin to skin. You are opening your emotional life, your mental, your physical. It's everything. It's all of you. And this is supposed to be something beautiful. That message is not there within pornography at all. So it gives a very abusive portrayal of sexuality, which is dangerous for boys as well as girls. I don't know if you'd like, I can share some of the survey results in terms of how boys who are invested in pornography, how they view girls.
Sure. Well, as best we can do without you.
Right.
Sure.
But essentially, we do know that boys, meaning teen boys, as well as older men, so they kind of follow the same pattern, they are far more likely to be accepting of sexual promiscuity, mm-hmm. of non-consensual sex, so again, the abuse, the acceptance of abuse and violence within relationships, they find that less problematic than, say, men who are not involved in porn. So this is not just a theoretical concern, it actually happens. You know, having a steady diet of pornography that degrades sexuality in that way desensitizes mm-hmm. boys and men, and they start to act it out in their relationships.
So, regular, as you said, regular use of pornography then shapes their worldview, their understanding of what sexuality is, and even what healthy sexuality is.
That's right.
And their self-worth, the worth of others, and in doing so, really devalues both people and the gift as well.
Right. And then when this goes forward, should they eventually, I mean, they value, boys and men who have been using porn also, when surveyed, value marriage less, mm-hmm. and when they do get married, are also less committed to that relationship. And there's certainly plenty of studies that have demonstrated pornography is a cause for divorce between couples.
Let's talk about addiction and how this becomes an addiction. You mentioned earlier that this can become an addiction, much like an addiction to drugs or alcohol.
Yes. Anytime human persons, anytime we experience a new experience or something exciting, mm-hmm. pleasurable, there is a release of neurochemicals mm-hmm. in the brain to reinforce. That reinforces that. And the same neurochemicals released when, let's say, a person is drinking alcohol or high on drugs, that same chemical, those same neurochemicals are released with exposure to porn. Excuse me. So at the physiological and the biological level, there are changes going on in the person's brain, which makes it very, very difficult to break the habit, which is why within our position statement and on our website, we do list a number of different groups that can help individuals and families mm-hmm. who struggle with this problem. Certainly, we want prevention. And so there's a number of filters and so forth that parents can use to decrease the risk of any inappropriate material coming through their computers. So prevention and treatment are key. It's you know, we tend to look at it as a moral problem, and it certainly is, but we have to be careful to realize, okay, this is also a biological and psychological phenomenon going on, and so we have to look at all avenues of help, the spiritual, the spiritual and the medical avenues of help.
Sure, it affects the whole person.
Correct.
In numerous ways. And so what I'm hearing you say is that it not only affects in one aspect of life, but in several aspects of life, which then shapes relationships, family, and then ultimately society as well.
Absolutely.
What can parents do then if they suspect that a child has been exposed to pornography, or if they suspect that their adolescent, their teen, or maybe heaven help us, even younger, may have an addiction to pornography?
Right. The key is in terms of any issue going through a child's lifespan is to hopefully the parents have made open communication. Something as simple, and I think we talked about this in a previous program, something as simple as the family table. If you as parents and children are in regular communication, sharing these daily events and also have consistently been acknowledging your child's feelings as they grow up, when you notice something odd, like, oh, Joe's spending an awful lot more time, he's withdrawn, he's kind of spending hours alone with his iPad or computer, and something doesn't feel quite right to you, then you want to be careful. Obviously, you don't want to go up in an accusatory way, but you can express concern. You know, gee, Joe, Dad and I have noticed some changes in you, XYZ. Is everything okay? Can we talk? So I think you want to start with open-ended questions and then see how your child responds and then you can actually bring up something, specific. Has anything, what have you been doing on your computer? Pornography is all over the place now. Lots of kids see it and use it. Is this something that you've come across, that you've been doing? So as much as possible, parents may be able to broach it on their own in that fashion. If parents feel uncomfortable or they try that route first and it doesn't go so well, by all means, talk with you can give your child's pediatrician a call, and it may be a topic that could first be broached together with the pediatrician and the parent in the room together. Prevention is always the best way. So starting early and young and trying to, particularly as Christians, promoting the virtues of modesty and chastity throughout the life, throughout their growth and development, it's going to make talking about these issues easier as they come up.
Sure. And We've talked on here on Faith and Family before about placing technology in the hands of children. It's
right.
The culture that we live in, the world that we live in, it's just simply a fact that the children are always going to be exposed to technology and access to the internet, whether it's at home or in the future as even in their career down the road, they're probably going to be using technology, even if they don't have access to it at home. But so many schools use technology today that it's just a part of our culture. It's embedded in our culture and society today. It's something that we're going to be using, I'm sure, for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. We do at the college, or if I have a parent talking with me, mm-hmm. I will encourage them. It's true, you can't keep them away from all technology.
Sure.
But do what you can to control what happens in your own home.
Right.
And certainly by, I also cannot emphasize enough how important it is to know their friends and to know the parents of their friends and to have open conversations with the friends' parents. And you can get an idea of what goes on, you know, in their home too. I frequently, as much as I can, have my kids invite their friends over to our place, mm-hmm. and they hang out here and they, you know, have some good clean fun.
And your house is the cool house to hang out in.
And that's what you try to... Yeah, you try. You know, I find parent networking is huge. It doesn't take a lot. It can take just two or three, and we share. We will rotate a pizza night, mm-hmm. so that no one family bears the cost or the burden of cooking or whatnot. But simple things like that to keep your children engaged with like-minded friends, and it keeps you engaged with your kids too. It's the most important factor. The parent-child connectedness across mm-hmm. the board is the most important factor when you're talking about any sort of social or psychological problems that kids can encounter today.
And so we're not going to avoid technology, but we are going to be proactive about how it's used in our home and knowledgeable right. of how it's used in our, you know, our children's friends' homes and our friends'
yes.
homes and
yes.
And,
yes.
and other family members' homes as well.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, even something as simple as this is something my wife and I have become sensitive to is what's playing on TV, because, you know, many homes you go into today in North America, the TV's playing in the background. We treat TV almost like we have treated radio in the past, and that is, you know, we have it going in the background passively. We're not necessarily listening to it intently, but it's always running in the background. There's always something playing in the background, or maybe we're watching it, but we're also doing, you know, five other things at the same time.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And what's on that TV, though, is the question. What programs are broadcasting or throughout our home on that TV, or throughout the grandma and grandpa's house, or you know, aunt and uncle's house, or friend's home, or the neighbor's home, and what's going on in the background? With a 2-year-old, we've been a lot more mindful of what kind of programs that might be okay for a 12-year-old to yeah. watch as parents have conversations with them and can understand those things and deal with them appropriately. But some right. things might be a little too scary for a 2-year-old.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, our recommendations, we encourage families early on. I don't talk about it at the prenatal visit, but
sure.
but once the baby has arrived, I do talk to parents about mm-hmm. Trying to keep that switch over to the radio, but keeping that TV off except for selected programs.
Sure.
And preferably just to keep TV and computer screens away from kids, certainly before the age of 2. And they'll say, well, what about baby Einstein? And I'll say, you know what? Never been proven to help kids. Babies, especially, they need people contact. They need to gaze into the eyes of their moms and dads. They need human interaction. Screens cannot, there's no age, mm-hmm. absolutely no age or developmental stage in which a screen can replace human contact.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. And that brings us back to the very topic of you know, pornography and its effect on children as well, and how it shapes and distorts our views. Well, certainly an important topic. I want to point our listeners to your website as well, bestforchildren.org. That's the American College of Pediatricians website. They can find more information, helpful resources there as well. Dr. Cretella, always great to have time to talk with you about these important topics, and I appreciate the statements that the college releases, and I certainly appreciate your time sharing this with us today.
Thank you. thank you so much, Andy. Thank you for this opportunity. You know, our goal at the college is to really to strengthen families, first and foremost, strengthen families, and in that way, we're going to improve society.
Well, thanks so much for your time today. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk with our friends at the Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch, learn about what's going on there, how they care for youth at risk. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Nick Cole had become a successful author of a science fiction novel, but while working on his next book, his publisher Harper Voyager sensed a possible pro-life theme and abruptly stopped it in his tracks. The book depicted robots that controlled the planet. These beings of artificial intelligence monitored the internet to see what the humans were up to. When they saw a video of a woman having an abortion because the baby was inconvenient, the robots decided to wipe out mankind for fear the humans would also abort them. Cole's editor was deeply offended and demanded he make major changes that were, quote, socially acceptable. Even in the world of science fiction, a pro-life message can't be tolerated and must be censored. Silencing the messenger is their only hope.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
One easy way to share the hope and comfort we have in Christ is through liturgical cards and art. Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts provides that assurance as each card contains a Bible verse meant to bring comfort to the receiver. The cards can be used throughout the year. Agnus Dei Arts selection of reproductions are also perfect for your home, your pastor, seminary students, or confirmation. AgnusDeiArts.com. That's AgnusDeiArts.com.
The time of Lent in the church is a time of reflection and contemplation, a time when people consider that spiritual nourishment might be as basic for genuine human living as water. On the next Sing for Joy, you will hear music that thirsts for the Spirit. Join us and be refreshed.
Sundays at noon on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood? Or an earthquake is destroying buildings? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Jesus once said, I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I'm Pastor Mark Hawkinson. On the next Jubilation, I'll share faith-strengthening music, and I'll talk about how Jesus is laying down his life for you means you get to take yours up again, all the way to heaven. More on that taken up type life on the next Jubilation Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation. You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. And joining me in studio today, two friends from the Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch. Looking forward to learning from them, learning about the services that Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch offers and how they do all that in the name of Christ. Joining me in studio today, Gene Caseman. He's a former president of Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch, now serves as executive CEO. Gene, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you.
Good to have you in studio, have a chance to talk with you today. Also joining us in studio today, Joy Ryan. She's the president and CEO of Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch. Joy, welcome to Faith and Family.
Hi, Andy. It is an honor to be here.
Thank you. Glad to have you in studio today. Let's talk about how you came to learn about Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch. Let's start with Gene. How did you first learn about Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch, and why did you get involved?
Well, Andy, it was somewhat of a little bit of a story. I was how I first learned about Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch is I was teaching up in Northeast North Dakota, and I was actually thinking of trying to join my brother teaching in the Santa Ana School District in California. And I realized that I had to probably have a little bit more on my resume. And I became aware of a position that opening up Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch for a vocational instructor. And so I applied for the position and I interviewed. And when I arrived at the ranch, it was probably two buildings. One of them was a dormitory for 36 boys. And then there was a buildings and grounds shop that was supposed to be a classroom. And then there was a school that they had in town. I thought, oh boy, this is different. And but I did make a commitment to stay for 2 years and open up a vocational department, then with the intent of having something on my resume and moving on. And that was about 41 years ago. I've been there for 43 years now. And what intrigued me about the ranch, number one, was the spirituality piece. And then also, Andy, what intrigued me about the ranch was it was kind of in a growth mode. They had a wonderful president at that time named Larry Knudsen. He was gifted with fundraising. There was a lot of church support that was garnered amongst the donors. So this agency just took off, and it's been growing ever since.
What did you enjoy as an educator, as a teacher? What did you enjoy working? You were working with the vocational side of things, right?
The boys I worked with, and then were really gifted.
Mm-hmm.
They had back then. We were working more with delinquent boys, and they were somewhat more street savvy, but they also had this innate intelligence to put things together to work. And from vocational side, they really wanted to be there, and so that was what made it a good experience. Plus, you could see some the outcomes. They, you know, they would get interested in the area, gain some vocational skills, and later back, you know, later when they came back as adults, I would visit with them, and they would have a family, they would have two or three kids, and they would talk about how they got interested in carpentry or welding, mm-hmm. and transformed that into a career.
And 41 years later, you're still connected to Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch.
Yes, I am.
And still serving, and that's great. Joy, let's talk about you and your background. What brought you to Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch? How did you first learn about it?
Well, when I first learned about the ranch because I grew up in North Dakota. And Dakota, at that time, Dakota Boys Ranch has been a piece of kind of the North Dakota landscape since 1952. So it's kind of hard to miss it. But as most good North Dakotans, especially in our adolescence, we work really hard to move away. And so I did some of that and studied overseas and did some work outside of the state and then came back. And my career took me to working in a human service agency, a regional human service agency, for the last 22 years. And I was executive vice president there. And in February, received a phone call from a recruiter and asking me if I was aware that Gene Caseman was planning on retiring. And, you know, when you're in those roles, those people call occasionally, and I had never, ever said yes before. But there was something more at work than just the recruiter. And so I really felt called mm-hmm. to come to work at the ranch and went through a long process, started August 3rd.
Excuse me, at the time, what was your understanding of the ranch? You said, you know, most folks in it's part of the landscape in the Dakotas, so you know a little bit about it. What was your picture in your mind of what the Dakota Boys Ranch was? What did you expect it, and how was it different when you visited and learned more?
I think when you look at a residential care facility, and we provide the highest level a psychiatric residential treatment facility as well as a residential child caring facility, and then we operate Dakota Memorial Schools for children that are in our care as well as day students that come mm-hmm. from sending schools. But it's an environment that you only know about when you need it. And so you have sort of a vague, because I had worked in the field, I knew that Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch did an exceptional job in residential care, but it's not someplace where you just stumble across mm-hmm. the campuses. I did not know the level of sophistication of the trauma-informed care that's happening mm-hmm. in the facilities. I did not know about the balanced learning environments in the classrooms. I knew about the standard of care. I knew about the Lutheran ministry and the support that the ranch had received by the blessings of many donors. Mm-hmm. But the depth of services and the sophistication of services and the trauma that the children have experienced was eye-opening for me.
And you're fairly new as the president and CEO. What was it that motivated you to say yes?
I believe it was God. I can tell you about some of the moments in learning when I was touring, seeing the children, talking to the folks, talking about how they work in the name of Christ. But I had heard some of those things in other situations before, but this was the time that I was called to be part of it. And so that's what's there. Some of the other pieces on the more, more separate level is the commitment that the ranch has that our children be good in life, not only be good in our care. Mm-hmm. And that's a very fine distinction about teaching kids life skills and teaching them transportable skills and giving them tools and techniques that take them out into the world, not just within our care.
Sure, skills that will sustain them in the rest of the world.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what is Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch today? What services are available? You've shared quite a few of them already. What services are available through Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch today?
The ranch is a residential care facility for kids. At our core, we're a residential care facility for kids from the age of 10 to 18. We do have a youth home that allows kids to stay till their 19th birthday. But in general, it's 10 to 18-year-olds who have some type of issues related to psychiatric issues or some type of neglect and deprivation issues that have brought them into our care. For whatever reason, because of their behaviors, they're not able to be cared for in a traditional foster home, or they may have had lots of opportunities where those situations failed them. Mm-hmm. We're very careful because our kids have often been in multiple placements. But it isn't because they failed. It's because the system didn't understand where they were at. Mm-hmm. And like I said at the beginning, we've changed the philosophy of what's wrong with this child to what has happened to this child.
Mm. So there's a big difference
there's
there.
There's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And when you say what happened to this child, you start to understand that the behaviors they have are what has helped them survive. Mm-hmm. You know, they've maybe become violent because that's the only way they could survive their home situation. They've maybe developed other kinds of coping skills that aren't appropriate in the classroom. But up until this time, they haven't had any alternative ways of dealing with it. So we work in a trauma-informed environment. We blend all the components, which means we blend the residential, the treatment plan, the psychiatric work with the educational plan, with their spiritual life plan, which is fully integrated. So our spiritual life advisors are part of the core teams. They're part of helping meet that child's and really bringing Christ's love to that child very often for the first time.
So very integrated. Gene, is there anything that you would add to that of what Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch is today?
Well, I think Joy did a wonderful job describing what the programming is, and in particular importance is the spiritual life aspect of it. And, we've been a dynamic agency through the years. We've been able to adapt to a changing environment. We've been able to put forth some cutting-edge programs, and all those have a spiritual base to them. You know, and they're basically done to help children, families succeed.
Joy, why is there a need for Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch today?
Because there is more and more opportunity for trauma. And we think of trauma, I think, when you see your parents arrested and taken away, that's very traumatic for a child. A child in that situation experiences a loss of control that is beyond their psychological ability to comprehend at that particular moment. They develop coping skills, and some of those coping skills are maladaptive, and that's what we see in their behaviors. But because of the breakdown in families, because of the changing family environments, because of drugs, because of technology, because of our exposure, this is a very complicated world to grow up in. I have an 18-year-old son. I have two older daughters. But the change from even the environment from my 26-year-old daughter to my 18-year-old son, it's incredibly challenging for kids to grow up healthy and strong and connected to their spiritual side, because there's just so much coming at them. And with families being challenged, it's just harder and harder. The support systems aren't there for kids.
So Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch works diligently to help meet those needs of those who don't have that support system.
Right. Absolutely.
What does it, Jean, what does it take to accomplish this, to provide these services, to meet the needs of these children who, of these youth whose support systems have become absent or who need that support?
I think, you know, I've talked to a lot of donors. I think obviously number one is the donor support of folks for a Christian mission, a Lutheran mission. And without that support of donors and support as a ranch, throughout the country, the ranch wouldn't exist. It takes those resources, those donors. And I've had one donor explain it to me. Well, he said, "Gene, it's not all about the money I give to the ranch, which is important." He said, it is also about all the prayers I give and other people that make it a successful agency. The other piece of it is you really have to have some dedicated and good staff. Mm-hmm. And we're fortunate in that instance. I think Joy would be a good example of that, of people who have skills, the desire to help children and families and coming forth, to work at the ranch. And then I think the spirituality, I know the spirituality part is very, very important. The ranch would not exist without the spiritual base that we get from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We are a faith-based agency. We're very forthright in that. It's in our mission statement. We actively, with the boys and the girls, the Spiritual Life Program permeats our program. We've been sued nationally more than once. I think once, 6 years ago was the latest time, by the Freedom from Religion Foundation. And, God kind of guides those things, and that turned out successful because they just gave up. for various reasons. So it's a combination of factors that all come together under the guidance of the Lord and make these things work.
How essential is the message of Christ? How essential is that spirituality component to what you do?
With boys and girls and with families, morality is a large piece of it, and also forgiveness. Sometimes with a child that's been abused, they have to forgive, but they can't forget because they don't want that happen. We want that to happen again, and it's really hard to do that unless you have some spiritual base, and also the forgiveness part of God for any sin, for the sins you have committed, plus the relationship you have with the Lord. And, and I like to say that we help children and families not only now but through eternity, and we have instances which really makes my heart just glow, where we've had boys and girls have been baptized, and sometimes whole families.
Wow.
So I think that's what makes us a lot different than many other agencies I know.
Any examples, any youth or maybe some of the staff that really stand out for you that provide an example of what Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch is all about, or a youth who's really benefited from that and where you see them today?
Well, I would, when I started at the ranch, like I said, I've been there 43 years, and I started when I was probably at 22. So I kind of, in a lot of ways, grew up with a lot of the boys there. At that time, it was Boys Ranch. And so chronologically, they started having kids when I started having kids, and a lot of those boys They look like me, less hair, a little bit of a pot belly. They're older. They're in their 60s, late 50s. They're grandparents. And, you know, you have the conversation, and they're contributing members to the community, and they're more important contributing members to their church. And the things they learned at the ranch, the spirituality, parts of the home, hard work, those things have carried on into their adulthood. And so when I talk to them, that's what's really important. And what they really do is, I've had one really good conversation with I can use his name, Eon Haar, and at one time he was a resident of the ranch, and now he's a doctor in Houston, Texas. And what his thing was passing what he learned on the ranch to his daughter. And the other example I can give you, and I've done this before, is, you know, the ranch was started in 1952. It was about 5 or 6 years ago. I was in my office, and it was on a summer day, and I got this telephone call. And it was from John, and he talked about when he was at the ranch, and I started putting things together, and I realized he was at the ranch probably 1954, and he was at a facility we had in Tolley, North Dakota, which actually was a working ranch. It was like a group home for six boys, and it was a smaller operation. And he was telling me how he had his mother had died, and his dad really wasn't taking good care of him. And he was smoking cigarettes and drinking beer on weekends, but he was in high school. And so he went to the juvenile judge. Well, you got to realize this in the 50s. And the juvenile judge knew he was over age 16. So he said, I'm going to give you a choice. He said, either you go to Dakota Boys Ranch, or I'm going to enlist you in the Marine Corps. Now, back then, a juvenile judge could do that. It was not the kinder, gentler version we have now. Oh, he said, Gene, he said, you know, I wasn't that stupid. So he said, I went to the ranch, and he said, they took care of me. I had to work. I learned how to work, but I had food. I had clothing. They got me straightened out in school. Spiritually, I was baptized. And he said, then when I did graduate from school, high school, this is up in Tolley, North Dakota, he said, I did join the Marine Corps. And it's a longer story, but he was stationed overseas. And at that time, Marines were, as of today, basically are embassy guards. And he was over in Germany, and he made friends with, as he was guarding the U.S. embassy, he made friends with a Canadian gal that worked at their embassy, and they got married. And he said, we moved back to Canada. And he said, you know, I didn't have any family left in the United States. His dad had died. And so he had a little bit of conversation, and he just said, you know, Gene, the reason I'm calling is simply to tell you that everything worked out okay. He said, I have children, I have grandchildren, the things I learned from the ranch, I passed on. So in a lot of ways, you know, the work of the ranch isn't, you affect one boy or girl or family, and that boy or girl will grow up, and in your mind's eye, they're still younger, but they're not, and they have children, and they have grandchildren. So it's kind of spreads its way out, you know, mm-hmm. like the simple thing, like throwing a pebble in the water.
What it sounds to me like is that you're putting the service of Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch is stopping a cycle of, mm-hmm. you know, where there was something, the youth was not receiving what he needed to grow up healthy and strong in his previous setting. And then coming to the ranch was able to receive that and change that cycle so that in the next generation, he was able to provide that, those same support for his children and grandchildren that wasn't there before.
Right. I tell a couple other stories. One of the things I just like folks to know is it heartens me every day. We have three staff, direct care staff, working with our kids right now that were former residents of the ranch. Mm-hmm. And they left the ranch, they went to college, they found their path, and part of their path is to give back. And that's very heartening. So I think those are remarkable stories. Another story I would share with you is when I met with Pastor Rick Jones, who was our chaplain at the ranch, when I was first hired, I asked him, I said, tell me about how you know Christ is at work here at the ranch. And he said, well, we had a young woman who came to us. She had been for the majority of her life kept in a cage in the basement of her home, naked, taken out only for abuse purposes. And when she came to the ranch, she was so sick that she presented as a cat. She purred, she meowed, she scratched, she hissed, because she spent most of her time in this cage surrounded by the cats. She ate cat food because that's what she had been fed at home most of the time. She wasn't fed cat food at the ranch, but sure. She was, yeah. I want to be very clear about that. But she was very, very hurt and suffering and had, again, created her own ways of surviving. Mm-hmm. And he said, but somehow through it all, she started coming to chapel services. And then she showed up in his office one day and asked whether Christ really loved her, even though she had been so bad. And they talked about the fact that she had not been bad at all. Like Jean talks about the kids, you know, children don't know anything except if somebody's being mean to me, it must be my fault, you know. Mm-hmm. And Pastor Rick told her that Christ has always loved her and has always been beside her and has always been part of her life. And that's why she was strong enough to live through what she had lived through. And then about 6 months after that, she came into his office and asked to be baptized. Hmm. That's about as powerful as a story as you can find. She had no sense of identity. She had no sense of self. She had never been seen as who she was until Christ led her on that journey. So I think that's a remarkable story. The other thing I'd encourage both you, Andy, and anyone who has the time to do it, to go onto Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch Facebook page, and there's a video of a young woman. We have a gentleman named Dr. Monty Selby, who is a gifted songwriter and a special education person who comes to work with our kids at Dakota Memorial Schools every year. And he helps give the children voice to their stories. And they tell him the words they use, and he works it into lyrics and a song. And there's a very gifted young woman. Her singing is incredible, who sings along with him on our Facebook page her song. And the thing that's powerful about her song and about her story is that she's reached the point in her life where she's offering help to others through her song. And it's really worth the 4 minutes of time to hear her sing her story.
Very good. And so we can find that on Facebook, looking for Dakota.
On Facebook, on Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch, and look for the video of Mariah.
How can we find out more in addition to Facebook, a website as well?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. DakotaRanch.org. We try to keep it as simple as we can. And so you can certainly do that. You can certainly call the numbers that are on the website and ask to visit with someone about the ministry and about the ranch and about our services. We're always eager to have people come and visit, tour any one of our campuses. We've had folks visit us this year from Arizona and Illinois and Iowa and New York. It's special places. I would suggest you not come in February because I can't guarantee the weather, but it's beautiful here today, but you know, come in June or July and show you a good time.
DakotaRanch.org. You can find out more. Find them on Facebook as well, Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch on Facebook. Thank you both for your time today, for sharing your story and sharing with us about Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch and the stories of these wonderful young people who are now receiving the care they need so that they can grow up and strong and pass on those great gifts to the next generation as well. Thanks for your time today. Our guest, Jean Caseman, former president of Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch and now executive CEO. Thank you, Jean, for being my guest today.
Thank you, Andy, for having us.
Joy Ryan, the president and CEO of Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch. Thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Andy, and God bless.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.